Hey everybody, welcome to our July 24th edition of SNP Now. I am your host as always, Chance Watson. With me as always is Josh McDonald. Josh, who's sponsoring us today?
Oh, once again, this week's episode is brought to you by Julie Zook with Silver Legacy Realty. If you're interested in buying a home in our beautiful Silver Valley, or if you would just like to sell your home, please contact Julie at 208-659-1764. She's your best friend in real estate.
Gotta love Julie Zook.
Love you, Julie.
All right, Josh, what's going on, man?
You know, not a whole lot.
No?
Kind of the calm before the storm, I think.
Right.
We had a decent last week. Some good stuff came out. But this week is busy.
It's good. This is going to be like a... God, we're right in the middle of festival season.
We are right in the middle of festival season. And ironically, so like Wallace kind of has the lion's share of the festivals.
Mm-hmm.
But sandwiched right in the middle of the summer, Kellogg and Mullen kind of rear their
heads. They like to pepper them in around it.
Yeah.
And
the two events that they have, they're pretty good. We've got Silver Hoops in Kellogg, and we've got the Fireman's Festival in Mullen.
Mm-hmm.
So this weekend, I mean, this has been kind of a...
We're gonna be a little busy.
We're going to be busy. It's going to be fun. You know, we're going to be at every event. We're going to be covering it. Some of us are going to be participating in some of it.
By the way, we invite anyone who takes... If you're at either festival and you take some good photos, shoot them our way. We love that kind of stuff. We'll be there taking photos, too, but... If you get a good one that we're just not there for, we miss, but be sure to send it to us. We love that kind of stuff.
I would have to agree.
Mm-hmm.
We need some good photos all the time, and there's no better way to kind of just show off if you're a budding photographer than to just send us some of your better shots. I think we're in store for some fun stuff. You know, you've kind of covered the Fireman's Festival historically. What do people have to look forward to?
Boy, that's going to be a fun event. As far as I know, it's going to be the same challenges every year, or the same challenges that we had in previous years. But I mean, where else can you go and watch people play tug of war with fire hoses and a barrel? Exactly.
You know, I'd have to say that's probably pretty specific to Mullen.
Yes, exactly. That's definitely... I mean, there's other fun challenges, too. They do a bucket brigade where they pretend, you know, back in the day when there weren't fire hoses, you had to hand off buckets in big lines. That's fun. The challenges out there, it's just a good time. I think the only time I wasn't having fun up there was when a fire hose got loose and knocked me around once. I was taking a photo of someone, and they didn't know that you had to wait for the hose to turn off before they got off of the fire hose.
Oh, no.
So when they did, it swirled around like a snake and whipped me pretty good. But
that's terrible.
Yeah, well, when you're trying to take a photo of it, you're narrow vision, tunnel vision,
right,
through the lens, so you're not expecting it.
That's true.
Yeah, that was it. But no, you're as much as I've been covering Fireman Fest, we got a lot of Silver Hoops content today.
Oh man, Silver Hoops is... you know, some people disagree with me here, but you know, when I think of the festivals here locally, it's 1A and 1B with Wallace Blues Fest and Silver Hoops. The Wallace Blues Fest, in my opinion, is probably one of the coolest events that we have, but it's more geared towards adults and not as much a family oriented thing as Silver Hoops is. So whereas Blues Fest might bring in a huge amount of adults, Silver Hoops brings in a ton of people, but from infants all the way to, you know, grandma in a wheelchair watching her grandson.
Sure.
So, I mean, these are the two biggest events, I believe, that the Valley has. Obviously, I'm a basketball player, so I really do love Silver Hoops. I'm pretty sure I'm closing in on, like, my 20th time playing. So, I'll be 30 in August, and this will be my... right around 20 times playing in this thing. So
done this once or twice,
huh? This isn't my first rodeo, so
gotcha.
And it's not looking like it's going to be a million degrees, so I'm really...
Boy, that's going to
really
be nice.
Loving it.
Yeah, you
really
don't do well with... I guess I don't do well with heat either, but you really don't do well with heat.
I'm more vocal in my complaining.
Yeah, I was going to say, I just kind of cook.
That's why polar bears live in the Arctic.
That's
not
true.
In the desert.
That's very
just
true.
Be real.
Well, How about we jump on over to our Saturday, July 20th headlines?
Hey, you know what? That was actually a pretty good paper. I think I had a few stories in that one, I think.
Did you really?
Yeah, I think I had at least three on the front page.
You did. You did. You're all over this one.
Kick it off with, Mountain Valley of Cascadia. They won some state awards at the Idaho Healthcare Association Awards Ceremony in Boise.
They just win
what
all of the awards.
That song, All I Do Is Win.
Yeah.
Like, that
That's
really
all they
should
do.
Play at their facility. They just do so good. And they had two award winners, Ira Coolin, who is the husband of our beloved Emily Coolin.
Mm-hmm.
She's great. He's Cascadia's maintenance director, and he was named the Idaho Healthcare Association Skilled Nursing Employee of the Year. And then resident Robert Bob Olson,
mm-hmm.
won the Distinguished Resident Award.
Right.
So, you know, these awards, the people who receive them, they're nominated by members of the staff, members of the organization where they're at.
Mm-hmm.
So it really is just a huge honor for these guys. And they go down to Boise and they're honored in front of all of these contemporary, colleagues.
Sure.
And it's just a big deal and just another feather in the cap of our Cascadia facility here in Kellogg.
Gives us another opportunity to work with Emily. So
yeah, it really does. And mm-hmm. and she's great. She's always so good about getting us stuff and making sure that everything is as thorough as possible. So huge shout out to Mountain Valley of Cascadia. Congratulations, Ira and Mr. Olson. You guys rock. Keep doing what you're doing.
Perfect. Well, to stay in that same vein, my story on the front page there, we've got another state recognition for a local here at the Kellogg School District. Angela Durick was recently elected as the two-year member-at-large director of the Idaho Association of Business Officials. This is just coming off the heels of the former transportation director getting state recognition, too. So this is just another great feather in the cap for Kellogg School District. With her position, she's going to be responsible for representing the association members through the entire state of Idaho, and she's going to be really active through strategic planning and for the association. She will also, while being here in Kellogg on the board, she will also serve as a liaison between the association and the school district. So after she was initially put up for it through a coworker that put her up for it, and then she won an election, and it's a great thing for our area.
Angela does a lot there too.
She wears many hats.
Yeah, she's been really busy working behind the scenes with Dr. Nancy Larson,
mm-hmm.
On things like the bond situation there in Kellogg.
Yes,
and she's the clerk for the school board.
Yeah.
I mean, she's just...
Well, you gotta love that. I mean, not only, she works here, but she's also a Silver Valley native.
Right.
So you gotta love when they...
Always nice when they stick around.
Absolutely. Cool. Moving on. Josh, what do we got for Dare to Imagine? Is that coming up here
soon? So Dare to Imagine started earlier this week. Uh-huh. It's the fifth year for the camp. The camp is kind of... It was put on. It was created a few years ago by the local ministerial association, a group of like several pastors came together and was like, what can we do to make our community better and give our kids something to kind of inspire hope and mm-hmm. help them explore some of their interests? And they came up with this camp. This camp is, averaging between 200 and 300 kids a year. It's completely free.
Mm-hmm.
So much donations and time and volunteerism go into this. But it gives kids opportunities for things like cooking. And this year, instead of like cooking in a kitchen, they're learning how to cook like outdoors, like mm-hmm. campfire cooking and
cool.
charcoal and
cool.
propane, archery, gun shooting, horseback cool. riding, hiking, cycling, fishing. Not to mention there's tons of sports. There's science, art. There's so much for these kids to do during this week.
Love it.
And it's completely free. I mean,
that's awesome.
There's a bus that picks them up in the morning, drops them off at the school. They go to camp. They come back. Lunch is free. The camp is free. Then they do the second half of their activities. There's a snack provided, and then they hop on the bus and they get taken home.
We really do need... It's always great when we get more opportunities for kids in this area to do stuff.
For
because
sure.
some have complained that there's just not enough for them to do.
Right.
And to that point when you don't have stuff to do, sometimes you can get in trouble. So this is another one of those things, in addition to silver hoops that we'll talk about later.
Well, and to that point, a lot of these kids who are going to be able to do things like the equestrian, the shooting, the archery, the hiking, mm-hmm. they might just not be aware of some of the options they have.
Sure.
Kids who say they have nothing to do might not know that, oh man, you can
there go hike that trail. There is stuff to do.
There is something to do. Yep. Or here, let me show you and how you can enjoy where you live. So this camp is awesome. I'm really looking forward to seeing how their numbers go. Hopefully they're up. They get volunteers from local churches as well as the Idaho Servant Adventure kids come in and volunteer. So, you know, you can't say enough positive things about Dare to Imagine.
Perfect. Perfect. Well, I think we'll jump over to the last story on our front page for the Saturday. Josh, tell me why we have another photo of trash-related stuff on our front page.
You know, and sometimes you just have to embrace your role as a lightning rod. And I've done that here. I had a chance to talk to the county commissioners a couple weeks ago mm-hmm. To address some more of the garbage issues that are going on up the North Fork.
Yep.
It's despite all of the commissioners pleading and the garbage companies pleading, hey, guys, please don't put mattresses, construction, garbage, appliances, TVs, just the craziest
stuff. Just kept going anyway.
They don't care. They're still doing it.
Gotcha.
And you know, we got a mixed reaction on our Facebook page where people still seem to believe...
Sure. It's a good debate. Yeah. It's a good debate on our Facebook page.
People seem to truly believe that the people that are coming from out of town are bringing this trash over.
Mm.
Personally, I can't imagine myself like, hey, I'm going up the river, grab a mattress.
Sure, it's only conventional logic. I mean, if you're from Spokane or even just in the from the area, it doesn't really make sense to bring trash with you over.
Right.
It's more of along those lines of so the littering of the river, like along the beaches and stuff, that's a separate issue. Right. But you're not going to see somebody throwing a washer into the river. It's into these dumpsters.
And we had talked actually. So I found out that these trash cans and the bathrooms that are up there by the Bumblebee Cutoff.
Yeah.
These are all paid for by they're called RAC grants. And
okay.
That's through the Forest Service. And those are Resource Advisory Committee grants.
Gotcha.
These grants, basically the commissioners look at what we have from our federal lands, and they go, okay, so we want to put these in place to help maintain these lands. And then the United States Forest Service looks and goes, okay, you're right. We don't want littering. We don't want, people going to the bathroom in the middle of the forest. We want to keep this pristine as possible. So they give money to facilitate things like garbage cans, dumpsters, mm-hmm. bathrooms, extra enforcement, all these things up there to ensure that the forest area that we have stays nice.
Sure.
Now, a lot of people are under the impression that their tax dollars are what's paying for these dumpsters and things like that. Not the case. Specifically, these RAC grant monies have to go to those things.
Gotcha. Like
they can't go anywhere else.
Gotcha.
Otherwise, it's essentially stealing. At that point, it's illegal for them to use these grants for other things. And you and I actually had a conversation because when we were under the impression that it was tax dollars paying for it,
if I'm paying for it, I should be able to use it for whatever I want.
Right.
Yeah.
So that's not the case here.
Mm.
So, I had a chance to talk to Mike Fitzgerald, and he kind of outlined me with what some of the plan that's coming. They're talking about next year maybe taking a look at what they're called recreational. Let me find it here because I can't specifically remember. They're going to look at recreational properties.
Okay.
So say you're a property owner, you own property up the river,
mm-hmm.
but you're renting your property out. You're like subletting it.
Sure.
To people, you have it parceled out.
Sure.
What they are going to do is they're going to, instead of looking at these RAC grants possibly, they're just going to start taxing the people who own the property there.
Gotcha.
Those people will be responsible for making sure that if they're parceling out their land, that the people who stay there that are renting it from them are covering these fees.
Gotcha.
And You know, they talked about, I'll just read you the quote from Mike Fitzgerald. Hopefully by this time next year, we will have a revenue stream coming in from what we are calling recreational properties. Once we do that, we can take it to the next level and define it by how many camping spots are at each site. To do that, we will need to have an initial revenue stream so that we can afford to use some newer technology, like flying a drone over the properties to see how many camping sites each property has. A lot of people seem to be turned off by that concept, but, you know, at this point, what
can the commissioners do? Gotta have something realistic, yeah.
You know, it's all about those initial costs. It's, you can't just set up a toll booth. You have to have money to set up a toll booth. You have to pay someone to man a toll booth. So this is probably the easiest way for them to get a jump on this.
Sure.
A lot of people seem concerned about a drone flying over.
Sure.
And that they can't fly a drone over somebody's property. Well, they can fly one over the river, though. And the river technically doesn't belong to anybody.
Right. So there you go.
For those people who are concerned about that, I mean, they can take pictures. They can kind of do whatever they want as long as they're not flying it over your property.
Right. Well, it sounds like one way or another, the trash is going to be there regardless. And because of all that trash, you're going to have multiple trips with a garbage truck coming in. And all that mileage, you're going to have some wear onto your tires.
Oh, yeah.
You caught you. I'm surprised on that one.
Oh, you did catch me off surprise. And, you know, Silver Valley Tire is here to help you with all your tire needs. ATV and dirt bike season is upon us. Stop in and check out Maxxis ATV and dirt bike tires. For your vehicle, we offer a nice selection of Cooper and Toyo tires. Stop in and compare prices. Silver Valley Tire is located at 407 West Cameron Avenue in Kellogg, Idaho.
I'm just going to have to keep tire puns ready.
You got me on that one. I was not ready for that.
Not following along on that
one? I was like watching you like, what?
Where's he going with
this? Why is he getting so bogged down by the tires? All right, you got me.
All right, cool. All right, moving on to today's stories in our Wednesday edition. What's our headline, Josh?
So our headline, once again, we're going to talk about Silver Hoops. Silver Hoops 26 is upon us.
Mm-hmm.
The biggest number of teams that we've ever had sign up, mm-hmm. has signed up. I mean,
we can gloss over a little bit because our interview today, we get really in depth with that. So
it's going to be a good time. There's going to be plenty of vendors. You know, I just would say that anyone who, it's not going to be so hot.
Sure.
So anyone who wants to come check it out, come on down. It's free. You come watch some good basketball of all ages.
Definitely.
The pool's free. You know, you can just kind of come kick it in the park and have a good time and enjoy some vendor food. Everyone loves vendor food.
Who doesn't?
Right. So that was kind of our headline there.
Gotta love it. Gotta love it. Well, going in the front of the, or the, also on the front, another big event that I went and covered over the weekend. We kind of hinted toward it, I think it was toward the end of our last podcast, but the Extreme Midget Wrestling going on in Murray, Idaho at the Bedroom Gold Mine. I went up there and I snapped some good photos of the action, and boy, it wasn't the turnout that they were hoping for compared. God, the first year, over 300 people showed up that thing, and this year a little turned down because the owner, he told me that it was basically because of the days. Friday was not probably the best day to put it on, but it was the only day they could do it. Last year they had it on a Saturday, a little earlier during the day, because it got chilly out there a little bit.
Yeah, and anyone who's been around here lately has noticed that the nights have been cold.
Yeah.
We've been having hot days and cold nights. Yeah, it's like living in the desert.
Man, when that sun came down up there, it got chilly pretty quick. But regardless, the wrestlers went on. They powered through. It was a good time. It was fun. It's a very unique experience. That's probably the best way that I can put it. When else can you watch? Oh, and one of the new things, so they had 7 wrestlers this year instead of 5, which was cool. A few more matches and that kind of thing, a little more excitement. And then they also, what they didn't have last year, they had a female wrestler come up, which was cool. She defended her belt and won her match, so that was
in an intergender match. Yes, if I'm not mistaken.
Yes, it was if I'm not mistaken, Pinky versus Psycho.
And let me just give you, so I'm a wrestling nerd.
Each wrestler has like its own angle, right? Yeah. Like that's their thing. Okay, yeah. So it was she. I mean, she was just kind of her thing was girl.
I'm going to totally what they call mark out. So okay. Internet fans are called marks, and If Hank Roundhorse is listening to this, he'll know exactly what I'm talking about. Right now, intergender wrestling is almost hitting a fever pitch. Because equality and sure. things like that are really starting to play up. And the fact that we're starting to see more and more female athletes that mm-hmm. can absolutely hang with their male sure. counterparts without the help of any performance-enhancing things.
I'm going to say this match in particular probably wasn't G-rated for all audiences. but yeah, no, I understand where you're going with that.
And they're super popular. I can think of in the last month at least two very high-profile intergender matches uh-huh. that have happened on multiple wrestling platforms. Sure. So it is absolutely not surprising that you would see the main event of the evening being a lady midget wrestler against mm-hmm. a dude midget wrestler
right.
for a belt. That's awesome. Yeah.
Oh no, she held her belt and it was a good match. And the whole, I mean, it's just a fun time. It's yeah. a really fun time. It's a unique experience. You go there. Cause it's not like anybody like turns on to ESPN and says, oh, what's the midget wrestling going on today? Like,
yeah. If you're watching ESPN 8, the Ocho, there maybe, you go. Absolutely. Maybe you are.
Absolutely. What a great movie that was. in any case, no, it was a good time.
And just so you guys know, they call themselves extreme midget wrestling. Like,
yes, that is the actual term for
that's
it.
That's not so. Us using some sort of slang vernacular. Like, that's what they call themselves.
Yes, exactly. No, in fact, they're a lot more laid back on it than we are.
Yeah.
So yeah, they embrace what they are wholeheartedly, probably almost to an uncomfortable level sometimes, but no, regardless, it's a good time. I would say the turnout was about roughly half of what it was last year.
So still a good time.
Still a good turnout. The owner, Chris Littlejohn of the Bedroom Goldmine, he told me that they might put the event on a shelf for a little while to bring in something else that was unique. He floated the idea of roller derby, which, again, I'm not a roller derby enthusiast, but I'd go up there and watch roller derby, sure.
Roller derby's fun.
Yeah, absolutely. So some interesting things going on up there. They also, Murray's coming up on Molly Badam Days here soon, so we'll be, not to get one of our plug stories out here soon, but we're going to try to do profiles on the Molly Badam girls again this year.
Oh, excellent.
If we can contact all of them, we'll do another little profile on each one. If I'm not mistaken, it's decided by, like, you go to their business that sponsors them and you slip money into the jar and whichever.
I believe so. Yeah.
Something like that. Okay. Gotcha. That makes sense. Okay. What else? What else we got?
Yeah, I think you had another story.
I did.
I'm trying to remember which one you had, though.
Oh, Pinehurst Days. That's right. We're all on festivals right now, man. Yeah. We already talked about that, and it's Pinehurst Days. Okay, so Pinehurst Days, going much more down south than Murray, that's going to be a thing this year after a lot of people saying it wasn't. It was, for a while, the event was struggling really hard. It lost its, like, marquee event, the burnouts. That's what Pinehurst Days has always been known for. It lost that. Volunteers were dropping off. It really wasn't looking like it was doing it. So the Lions basically put out a call to action, said, hey, we're going to need volunteers to step up to get this going or it's not going to happen. And they got the volunteers. Pinehurst Days now, that's set for the 2nd, 3rd, and 4th of August. And boy, I in the story we detail out, and they also have it on the on their website as well. They can check that out for more information. But there's a laundry list of events, including the return of the burnouts, which is a huge deal for a lot of people around here.
So I grew up here, and it's funny that we talk about these things, these festivals. You know, Gyro Days, because the Blues Fest is still fairly young.
Yep.
But,
in comparison to a lot of other ones, yeah.
Historically, your summer schedule went Depot Days, Gyro Days, mm-hmm. then you had 4th of July, mm-hmm. Silver Hoops, and then Pinehurst Days.
Sure.
4th of July and Pinehurst Days were both in Pinehurst. Both of them, I would say, were the two most fun events that happened every year.
Gotcha.
Something about that community, when it rallies together, it's mm-hmm. designed almost perfectly for, I mean, it's one main lane in, one right. main lane out. And
everything's on that main lane. Yeah.
Yeah, you can put the vendors and the booths right up the middle of the town and everyone's going to see it.
That's kind of how I wrote the story. Basically, how everything's going to start out is both days you could start out at the Pinehurst-Kingston Lions building. And then from there, you can just walk up and down Division to go to the golf scramble on Saturday. On Sunday, there's the BMX challenge that they always have. Yep. That one's coming back. But other than the BMX, which is a more recent addition to Pioneer's Days, and then the Burnouts, which is a historic one, all the other events are really, really new to this kind of stuff. They're going to do a kids, Real Life Ministries is doing a kids fair on that new land they bought.
Oh,
that you wrote a story on.
Brood Awakening and the restaurant.
Yeah, over there. So they're going to do a little kids park there. It's there's going to be a barbecue competition at the Tall Pine. People can't see your facial expressions over the podcast.
I love barbecue so much.
So yeah, it's going to be a good time. There's going to be a battle of the bands.
That was the thing that kind of piqued my interest because, I mean, you've got five bands coming in right now.
Yeah, something like that. All locals.
So five bands coming in. So essentially you're going to get a free to view concert.
Insane. You can, and also not to shamelessly plug, but you can, watch the battle of the bands. If they're a local band, you can vote for them in the top five.
There we go.
Uh-huh.
You could plug them in the top five.
Just go on to the news press and vote away. We need your guys' opinions on that. We got to hand out some awards.
But the highlight of it is definitely the return of the Burnouts.
Yes, the highlight is definitely the Burnouts. I think a lot of people are excited about that. They needed something. So what took the place of the Burnouts that made it palatable was the car show. And that worked out well, but the car show is not coming back this year. So right.
The car show was, I love classic cars. Mm-hmm. But it was the same 100, sure. 200 cars coming every year, which that's not a problem, sure. But at the same time, it's not going to bring anything different.
No. Well, and it's just a different nature of an event. Like Burnouts are, it's active, it's exciting, you know, whereas car show is kind of like, it's still fun to go to.
One of my good buddies in high school, his name, Jonathan Fuller. I think he still lives around here. His dad, Troy, had a Chevelle that he entered into the Burnouts one year. Mm-hmm. And I thought it was the coolest thing ever. I mean, we were standing 20 feet away from this thing.
I've never been. I'm gonna have to check it out this year. I think the closest thing that I've ever done that was remotely like that is, I've because they do a circuit here in North Idaho, the lawnmower races, the lawnmower drag races. I've seen those. I'm sure it's not comparable, like in terms of like what it is, but
right. They did do drag races one year.
They did
on that lane behind Watts Appliance between Watts and the golf course.
That's right.
Which I'm pretty sure that's not where they're doing the Burnouts this year.
No, though. This year they're doing it on the Dyke Road.
Down by like the gravel pit.
No, like right when you come into town, kind of thing. Like when you come in past, so you get off into Pinehurst and you go right before Brood Awakening. That road.
Oh.
Yeah.
So a town that they can, or a road they can essentially
yep.
close off with it being completely non-effectual.
Yeah.
The only problem is there's, I mean, not a lot of standing room there. So if you want a good spot, you're going to have to get there nice and early. Mm-hmm. That should be a lot of fun, though. That's what, Saturday night?
That's Saturday night.
Kind of the main event of the whole thing.
Yeah, and it tapers off. And then the Saturday night will cap off with a outdoor movie.
Oh, okay.
For everybody. They had not specified what movie is playing yet, but they will
excellent. Get
that out. And then Sunday, of course, the BMX races. So it's going to be a good time. They have given the event a Star Trek Next Generation theme, which I appreciate.
Yes, you do.
Uh-huh, as you roll your eyes over there.
I didn't
know. So Pinehurst Day is the Next Generation. So and it truly is that. Truly is that. This is, there's definitely going to be, it's, they're really trying to give it some new life. Oh, the geocaching. Friday, there's also a geocaching event where...
Geocaching is like GPS coordinates with like your phone.
Scavenger hunt kind of thing. Yes. It'll start Friday morning. And kids are invited. Anybody's invited. You get your phone. You get the GPS coordinates. You can find where those
that's cool. caches
are. Oh, yeah.
That's kind of a fun absolutely. Little thing to do.
Yeah. So for more information on that, check out the story or check out Pinehurst Days' website.
Excellent. Mm-hmm. Excellent. So to wrap up this week's paper, this Wednesday edition, I had a chance, and I've done a couple of these stories now that you guys might have seen, where my daughter Chloe and I, we go to like museums or historical places, and I kind of let her lead me through almost at her perspective. Mm-hmm. So we've done the Wallace District Mining Museum, we've done the Staff House Museum, the Bunker Hill Mining and Smelting Museum. And this last week, we had a chance to go to the Cataldo Mission. We had stopped there during the skills fair. And, I just kind of let her lead the way. What are you going to do?
Sure. She'll be pretty starting, independent on her own.
She's smart. She kind of knows what she wants to look at, she wants to
she's
look at it.
She's smarter than us, for sure.
Yeah, that's
absolutely
not even a question. But so we started off with a trip into the church itself, which I don't know. I didn't ask if she'd ever been there before, but just the way it was more thoughtful reflection as she looked at everything. She tends to be amazed by the concept of humanity overcoming technology or deficits in technology.
Sure.
So ornate hand-carved metal and wood things that she's going, these people did this by hand without a saw, or, you know, the fact they painted the ceiling of the church with huckleberry juice and it's still purple up there. Those kind of things were pretty big to her. And then we went down to the museum. Now, the museum in my time, I hadn't been to the museum in years, and the museum has changed so much.
I'm guessing I probably need to go back in there again, because the last time I was there, it was still kind of under construction.
It is spectacular. It's 5,000 square feet, the museum side, and you walk in. The first thing you do is you sit down and watch this film montage thing where they kind of... They talk about what Native American life in the area was during the seasons. And it's projected onto this screen, so it's almost like it's like 3D almost. Mm-hmm. It's very cool.
Yeah.
And they go over Circling Raven's prophecy, and his prophecy was that the men in black robes, and I apologize, I'm paraphrasing here, men in black robes wearing crosses around their necks would come and help the Native Americans and explain to them what the Great Spirit was, and the Catholic priests that showed up fit that description. So you go through this museum, and it really explains to you kind of how the natives interacted with the missionaries, how they interacted with one another, what life was like for them.
Cool.
You learn the tensions between, apparently there was a very heated rivalry between Catholic missionaries and Protestant missionaries.
Oh, yeah.
Where they even went so far as to, like, make a diagram of, like, Catholicism, the road through Catholicism will lead you to hell. And then they fired back with, oh, well, Protestants will also take you
to
hell. Like,
so your kid liked all that.
So she walked through, and it was amazing the things that stood out to her. Things like she was taken kind of by surprise by how much the Native American people care about the museum, care about the land, care about the mission itself.
Mm-hmm.
So for her, it's the little stuff that kind of stands out, and she likes to find the details. Her and her brother Radley got to look at these old illustrations that I think they're copies, but they were done by one of the priests of the area. Uh-huh. And so they give you magnifying glass so you can look at the fine details of it. She had a blast. And walking out of there saying that, you know, if you're a resident here, you should be making the trip up there once a year just to soak it in,
sure.
You know? And if you're coming through, if you're stopping through, it's like a can't miss kind of museum.
Sure.
Because it's so vital to the history of the area.
Very cool. Very cool.
So, good time. Another good, another successful walkabout with Chloe.
Gotta love it. Gotta love it. Well, because we haven't talked enough about it already, Josh, what's going on with Silver Hoops?
All right. And the 26th annual Silver Hoops is already breaking records with over 140 teams signed up for this year's tournament. Make sure to come down to Kellogg this weekend to cheer on our local Silver Valley teams and check out our 12 food and drink vendors, as well as a massage vendor.
Oh, massage vendor.
Yeah, that might actually be something I might be hitting up a few times.
Right.
I need to get a chiropractor vendor down there.
That would be one way to do it. So to give us a little more insight about Silver Hoops and what's going on with that, we had a sit down with... Who did we have a sit down with, Josh?
Well, we are about to have Jeff Colburn and Brianne Sorensen with Silver Hoops join us. So
jump right in. All right, well, let's cut away to that. This week's interview is brought to you by Brood Awakening. Make sure to check out their daily specials that include drinks like a refreshing bowl blaster or cold iced coffee. Brood Awakening is located at 802 North Division in Pinehurst and is in the running for two of the Shoshone News Press's top five contest categories. Make sure you go online and vote Brood Awakening for Best Barista and Coffee Shop.
Hey, and in the studio today we have Jeff Colburn and Brianne Sorensen. I'm sorry, Brianne. With Silver Hoops, and we're going to talk about this weekend's 3-on-3 basketball tournament. Guys, how's it going today?
Going great.
Pretty good. A little tired.
Excellent. Yeah, I'm
it's
sure.
A busy week.
It is a busy week. So, you know, we got, what, Silver Hoops 26 is this Saturday and Sunday, and it's looking like we're going to have our biggest tournament ever and nice moderate weather to play it in. So it's going to be a pretty good weekend, I think.
Was it really hot last year?
Last year? Well, I think last year's was pretty warm, wasn't it?
I believe so.
I think so.
The last one day it was. Warm. Yeah, we always seen, like, Hoop Fest, you kind of play with the numbers there, but in the end of July, beginning of August, it's hot.
Yep.
Yeah.
So, you know, you guys have been with Silver Hoops for quite some time now. You know, Brianne and I went to high school together, and it's like she was just kind of involved by de facto because her maiden name is Wendt. She's the daughter of Nathan Wendt. So he had, or she had to get involved.
I volunteered when it was mandatory to volunteer.
She was a mandatory volunteer. So how long have each of you guys been with Silver Hoops?
Boy, I've been on the committee probably since 2009, and my kids have been playing since 2005.
Yeah,
so.
Wow.
I haven't been on it as long. I can't remember the year I started officially. It's probably when I became like a graduate of high school that I started coming to meetings and not being Nathan's daughter and actually being part of it. But I got my big jump when I started doing the website for him because we used to just have a really simple splash page, and now we can register
online.
It's
kind of a family tradition.
Yeah, it really is becoming a family tradition.
I know my daughter's playing it this year.
Hey!
So we've got like the third generation jumping in.
My kid's playing in it too. Isn't that weird?
It's weird.
Isn't it weird?
Yeah.
So, you know, I this is kind of a tough question for you guys, but I always want to kind of talk about the history of things. Can you guys tell me kind of how Silver Hoops got rolling? Was it, did Hoop Fest have something to do with it? Or, you know, what's kind of some of the history on Silver Hoops?
Well, we were just talking and we're not entirely sure because we're both so young, right?
Right.
We don't know.
Yeah.
But I think the Chamber started it back in 93.
Yeah.
You know, I think Walt and Nate, Walter Hadley.
They kind of picked it up in 93.
Picked it up in 93.
97.
And carried it through, and then I kind of stepped on board at some point. And, you know, Everett's joined the club, and we have a few others.
Karen, too.
Karen Holstrom's pulled a lot of weight over the years, so there's been a lot of people that have stepped in and made sure it's been successful and carried on over the years.
So it's just as old as I am. Great. Awesome.
Yeah, really old. Well, because I know, like, Hoop Fest just had their 30th, and so this being Silver Hoops 26th, And we've seen kind of the rise of these three-on-three tournaments all over. Funny thing, they're not a thing in the Midwest. I have friends from Detroit who'd never heard of a three-on-three tournament, and he's been here for a couple years. So this really is kind of, it almost feels like this is one of those things that's very hyper-local to our region almost. And we've seen, I mean, this has got to be, with 147 teams, this could be the second biggest one in the area, I would think, right?
What?
Yeah, I think we're right up there. The YMCA used to be in Spokane Valley, was in the 200 range, but they've been slipping the last few years. So I wouldn't be surprised if maybe we're number two now.
Wow.
I know there's some down in like southern Idaho that are bigger, like, is it Bam Jam?
Oh, yeah.
Is what it's called, stuff like that. But we're not quite up to their numbers yet, but that'd be cool.
Growth every year. It seems like Silver Hoops kind of hit a, like, kind of a downward, like, 6-7 years ago, but then I don't know what changed, but the numbers kind of started climbing back up, and now we're looking at our biggest one ever with, what, 147 teams, you said?
Almost 150.
Wow.
So, that's 30 more than last year.
So. Do you guys think that the size, the growth is an anomaly, or is that, did you guys do some different stuff this year?
Well, I think we've made, I think I would say we've made a lot of changes over the last 5 years. And, you know, those are to make it more family friendly. You know, it's pretty cool to have the pool, you know. So if you're a family, basketball family, you're out there all day, you can go dunk in the pool.
You're meaning the swimming pool, not
the swimming pool. Yeah, swimming pool. We also referee 3rd through 8th grade divisions now. So we have licensed referees that actually call those games, you know, because one of the things, certainly from a parent's perspective, and to keep the parents calm, and from a coaching perspective, is I don't want kids getting all the bad habits that 3-on-3 because they watch guys like you play, right?
Oh.
We don't want them getting bad habits. So we started refereeing those games. You know, we tell them we're going to call it just like a high school game. So we want them to learn skills in the summertime. And I think people have appreciated, parents have appreciated that we call those games and not just monitor them. And that's really helped, I think, our younger kids and the people coming up.
Yeah, and I think that the older divisions are liking that we've been getting more registrations and they've been able to play more, like with the two-day play.
And that's something I want to talk about. So the new style where it's pool play on Saturday and then a single elimination tournament on Sunday, correct?
Right.
Now, is that for every division this year?
That is, actually. It's something we brought into effect, I think it was the last year for sure. I can't remember if it was 2 years ago.
I feel like it was last year.
And it became almost a necessity at some point when you had that downward trend. We call it division combinations. When you don't get enough teams registered in a division to do a double elimination bracket, because you need at least, is it like five to get a good one where you drop down and you can play in a loser bracket also, so you get a three-game guarantee. If you don't have enough teams, then you have to combine people, and they don't really appreciate it as much when you have your fifth graders playing with the third graders or things like that. So we've been able to make it so that even if three or four teams are registered in a division, that they actually get to play each other and stay playing and then do a tournament the next day.
So you've handled a lot of the bracketing.
Well, I attribute that to my father. He did the bracketing back when it was all on paper and by hand, and you drew the brackets and put them on the walls. And then when the digital age came and we've been doing a website and we wanted online registration and people want to know when they play online, we kind of had to find a software that would fit that. And I think I just got the buck because I was the youngest on the committee and a little bit techie. And so Nathan still helps usually. I've got Ethan Went, my brother. Yeah. He's going to help with some bracketing this year too.
Good. How difficult is that? So, I mean, you guys at least could put a bracket together on Thursday, Friday for the whole weekend. Now you're putting the bracket together on Saturday night. Is that...
Well, I think it might be a skewed perspective saying we did it on Thursday before, because that usually involves staying up till 3 or 4 in the morning trying to put something like that together. And that's not feasible if you want to help reduce error and to help make it so that it's a smooth running tournament if you can get it bracketed earlier in the week, which is why we closed registration a little earlier in the last couple of years to help eliminate that, to also give us time to review all of our last minute registrations and make sure that there are no birth dates that are wrong or grades that are entered incorrectly.
Sure.
Gives us a chance in the first couple of days here. If you're getting phone calls from us, please answer them so we can verify your team's information and put you in a bracket where you belong.
Is it more difficult to do the bracketing on Saturday night now for the Sunday tournament, or is a single elimination tournament pretty easy to bracket?
It should be really simple. I'll put it that way. We've got a system that we use that does bracketing for us, but it's a little bit of a dated system, and it's what's been able to work for us in the past within the range of affordability and stuff like that. Because once you get past the range of a system that'll do everything automated for you, we lose kind of this small town system that we get, and you don't get to see things to be more fair, stuff like that. So if we use our system how it's meant to do, it'll throw a bracket together for us pretty quick, but we usually want to make sure that they're being seeded according to record and scores for and against. And
gotcha.
So as far as the Saturday night goes, as long as all the teams are turning in their slips and we get all the scores of the teams put in a timely fashion, then it works pretty good.
Gotcha. Okay. So, you know, I've played in it, gosh, I'm sure I'm getting close to the 20-year mark, which is horrifying to think about. But, you know, I talked to a lot of the people, and you do start to see a lot of the same people showing up at the various tournaments. And just three-on-three bums, you know, like ski bums. They go where the powder is, these guys go where the hoops are. We get a lot of compliments on both our kids' divisions, because we've made the change to maintain them, and our men's divisions, because we've never regulated them by height like some of the other tournaments do. It's always been kind of a men's open. This year, there's the addition of the elite division.
Yeah.
Where did you guys come up with that idea?
Well, that's our biggest division. So the out of high school to age 30. So we decided to split that up. If the better teams want to play against the better teams, then they have
or
that option
to do that.
Or at
least those who think they're better.
Yes. But anyway, we're trying to get more of the rec teams together and the elite teams together and split that division.
Right. Okay. We still have, what, 20-some men's teams this year?
Yeah, it'll be closer to 30 men's teams, and then almost 10 in our elite division.
Really?
But when you play an elite division, the winner of that division is still going to get a shirt separate from the other men, and they're also going to get a free team for next year to defend their title because they pay a little more to register for the elite bracket.
Yeah, I'm looking forward to watching some of those elite games. I think that's going to be a good time.
Yeah.
So, what's the most difficult part of putting together a tournament like this?
Well, I think I'd start with volunteers. It takes 30 to 40 people to put this event together. We've got a committee of 6 or 7 that put in time year-round to make it work. And then when we get to the event itself, then we work with usually the senior class. Kellogg has been historically one of the groups that's shown up every year. Storm football this year is coming. Washington DC or bust has been a help in the past. So,
well, and anyone who's looking for volunteer hours or for any kind of grant money for their volunteer.
So it's a chance to earn some money for nonprofits, but you're going to earn your money. So you're going to be out there helping us either monitor courts or picking up garbage, or we have a host of different jobs that we need done during the event.
Sure.
So it's been good for the community because it's a chance for them to raise money, nonprofits, and at the end of the day, this event is a chamber event to raise money for the chamber itself.
How many people would you, with 147 teams, you're looking at, almost 500 people in players, just in players?
Yeah, with the three.
So,
minimum on a team.
Yeah, closer to 6 plus parents, and, we'll be, parents, I friends. Would say, we're in the probably 1,200 to 1,500 range of people.
That I almost feel like that could be lowballing it a little bit, too.
Yeah.
Well, and we like that we've moved our bracketing style to do a tournament play on Sunday, so it invites everyone to stay the night on Sunday, or on Saturday evening, and then get rested up so they can be ready for the single elimination tournament. But that's also good for the economy to have everyone who's from out of town be able to stay with us if they'd like.
Absolutely. So, last real question I've got for you guys. What's your favorite part of the tournament overall?
Well, it's pretty cool to see kids out there playing. That's at the end of the day, I think that's why we do it, is kids can get out and play and have fun.
Mm-hmm.
The other favorite part of mine is Sunday night when we're finished. So, it's a long weekend. You're out in the sun all day, and you got to deal with a few knuckleheads throughout the tournament. But I think that's one of the other things, is we've got kind of a zero tolerance policy, and I think that's helped clean up some of the men division things that weren't good in the past.
Sure.
And I think at the end of the day, we want kids out playing. If they're out playing basketball, they're not out doing things they shouldn't be doing. So that's what we're trying to accomplish.
Yeah. I just like that we're doing something positive for the community. I'm a person who likes getting positive feedback, and that we've been getting more and more of that each year. It's kind of gratifying for me personally.
Mm-hmm.
And I like that means that everybody else is having a good time too.
Cool.
So that kind of does it for me, and that it's something that my family can be involved in, and I can say this has been around since I've been young. And
gosh, I feel like we have three of the Silver Hoops basketball families represented at this table, though. I mean, you've played in several. Bran, I don't know if you... Did you ever play in one?
I am probably the least baller in my family, but I do have one under my belt that I played
good,
in.
Good.
But I love basketball. I'm just not much of a player.
Spectator.
Well, that's what's good about Silver Hoops, is you don't have to be a player to come and enjoy it.
That's true. So. That's absolutely true.
I've shot a basketball before.
Yeah?
Yeah.
I bet that didn't go very
No, it didn't.
I would like to see that.
I gotta work.
Well, you can come and do our free throw competition and see how good you are. Or the 3-point competition. Just throw them up.
Just work.
The further back you move him, the worse it's going to get.
You got to use.
I don't think he'd be good at the slam dunk competition, though.
No, probably
not.
Probably not.
There is $200 on the line this year, though.
Is there?
It's a $200 competition.
Well, hopefully Garrett's worked on something cool to do. Didn't he win last year?
I honestly don't remember.
I feel like Garrett won last year.
I think he did.
He might have won. I was at a bit of a scramble last year with bracketing.
I'll get those moon shoes with like the rubber bands.
Stop. You stop a chance. All right, guys. Well, thank you for coming in. I really appreciate it. And, I'll see you guys out there.
Awesome. All right. Thanks.
And once again, thank you to Jeff Colburn and Brian Sorensen for coming in and kind of giving us, some of the some insight as to what makes Silver Hoops go. So
Absolutely.
Thanks to them.
Absolutely. Hey, one of our advertisers this week is Kellogg Plastics. Are you in need of lights for a special event? Kellogg Plastics is the place to go as they have LED lights for all occasions. Located at 113 East Main Street in Smelterville, stop in and check out their showroom of lights. You can view them at ledlightsunlimited.net. They also manufacture plastic parts for the Pete Boot Dryer.
They have some cool stuff there.
They do. I went in there. I got some Christmas lights there last year.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Had a few cool ones there, too.
Absolutely. Totally. So let's move into our regional headlines, shall we?
I love regional headlines.
Perfect. We have a lot of dog ones.
Yeah.
Which is okay with both of us, honestly.
Yeah, we really do like the puppies.
We do. Absolutely. What do you got over there? From the Coeur d'Alene Press?
Yeah, from the Coeur d'Alene Press. You know, this story ran today, I believe, by Brian Walker. Mm-hmm. And it's about a fundraiser. There's a limited number of tickets that remain on sale for the Dwayne and Lola Hagedon, the fundraiser at Dwayne and Lola Hagedon's expansive gardens at their home in Casco Bay in Coeur d'Alene. This fundraiser benefits the Kootenai Humane Society's new animal shelter. So, to purchase tickets for these fundraisers, you just need to call a Nelson at 208-819-2812 at the Kootenai Humane Society. And I apologize, the name is lost on me here. But you call there and they will help you purchase the tickets. Kootenai Humane Society is in its 40th year and they're trying to build a 24,000 square foot shelter.
They need it.
You know, I didn't
realize
that.
That's the one out near like the Hayden Airport, right? Like their current structure?
Yeah. Yeah, so
they need a new place.
So they're building a new facility next to, on the north side of, the west side of Atlas Road north of Hayden Avenue. Mm. So out there kind of in the spots between Coeur d'Alene and Post Falls.
Sure.
So, you know, right now they've already got 2.7 million of the 6.5 million that's needed. Mm-hmm. And ground will be broken when 90% of the funds are raised or pledged. Mm-hmm. They had a $250,000 donation from the Schneidmiller Family Foundation. Mm-hmm. And 10,000 from the Washington Trust Bank. I mean, they're pulling in some big time donations. Last year, the Kootenai Humane Society helped out over 2,000 animals, including dogs, cats, rodents, rabbits, birds, as compared to just 1,200 animals in 2010.
Oh, wow.
So in 10 years, roughly.
Wow.
They're helping almost twice the animals. The new building can accept 85 dogs and 120 cats, as opposed to the current facility that can only take in 60 dogs and 60 cats.
Gotcha.
So kind of a big deal. Absolutely. for the local area. I mean, I've adopted dogs from the Kootenai Humane Society. Mm-hmm. So mm-hmm. Definitely a worthwhile endeavor, and happy to be part of the Hagedon family for
definitely
supporting it.
Definitely. Absolutely. So let's jump north to Bonner's Ferry. The story is out of the Bonner's Ferry Herald. Written by Mandy Bateman. We've got the sheriff's office up there in Boundary County has received grants to get a new canine unit. The grant comes from the BNSF Railway Foundation. The past couple of years, the sheriff's office has relied on other law enforcement agencies with canine teams, including Border Patrol, Bonner County Sheriff's Office, Boundary, Bonner. Boy, they'll make those. That it's needlessly complicated.
The best part about that is Bonner's Ferry is in Boundary County.
Correct. Yeah. So the Boundary County Sheriff's Office is what I'm talking about, and Sandpoint Police. They will continue to work with those teams as needed, but their undersheriff says that they were excited to have their own team. So the person that's going to get this is Corporal Mike Valenzuela. I think I got that correct.
Valenzuela.
He's going to be the new canine handler for up there. So that's going to be exciting news for them. We recently just got some canine units here in Shoshone County, so we know down here that what a kind of a big deal that is.
Oh, their value is unheralded.
We actually just got, so that'll be an early plug for one of my future stories. We actually have a second canine, drug detection canine here in Shoshone County.
Excellent.
Name is Midnight, but we'll have a story on that later on.
Excellent.
Mm-hmm. What else you got?
So just a little bit down the road from Bonner's Ferry in Ponderay, Idaho,
okay,
Ponderay Dog Park has opened up.
Ooh.
Yeah. So Ponderay Dog Park is officially open for business and is the first fully ADA, American Disabilities Act, ADA compliant dog park in the country.
Wow.
Fully compliant.
You might have to take your dogs up there.
I'm not disabled.
No, but, no. But I mean, like, you're just going to have to take them up.
Oh, there. Yeah. Gosh, I could take all of my dogs up. Yeah, that would be a nightmare of a trip. But it's just a cool thing. The story by Mary Malone, she kind of highlighted not only the dog park opening, but a visitor named Caitlin. She was born with cerebral palsy, and she was able to take her dog. I mean, she's in a wheelchair. She was able to take her dog to the dog park.
That's awesome.
Which her dad got to watch her, and it was just, you know, kind of one of those things where a sense of pride going, you know, this is something that was built that not only everyone else can use, but my daughter can come and use it, you know. So this dog park community effort took more than 50 different organizations, including construction companies, different suppliers, electricians, and other individuals who donated to the project. The park is almost 2 acres big, and it's right adjacent to the Panhandle Animal Shelter.
Mm-hmm.
It's got both small and large dog sections, so you don't have to, you know, put your Chihuahua in a park with a Great Dane. You know that the Chihuahua would try to fight the Great Dane.
Right, of course.
It's got water fountains and, you know, benches. I mean, it's pretty much got everything that you want in a dog park, and it kind of matches the Ponderay Sandpoint vibe, so it's definitely a throwback. There's a public grand opening scheduled for this weekend, actually, from 3 to 6 p.m. at the dog park, and it's located at 870 Kootenai Cutoff Road, and there'll be live entertainment up there by Neighbor John and the Atomic Blues Band.
Maybe I'll bring my bulldog.
You know, I just love dog parks. I've talked to a lot of people about trying to get one here in the Silver Valley. And for every 20 people I find who want to help me with it, I find 200 people who say that, well, if you try to put a dog park in my neighborhood, I'm going to protest it. And I'm like, gosh, you own dogs, man. Chill.
Right. Well, it's for some people, I guess. Not from others. Let's jump on to the Montana side of the line.
Ooh.
Going on in Mineral Independent. We actually talked about this, the first part of this story in one of our earlier episodes, but, the county, Mineral County is working to attract guards to reopen their jail facility. So following a failed attempt to reopen the Mineral County Jail with a private company last month, county officials met July 12th to brainstorm ideas to market the vacant detention center officer positions. So it sounds like if you're looking for a job in that area, it sounds like you could probably pick one up at the jail. Right now, there's only currently 2 applicants for the detention officer position for the minimum 5 positions the county needs to reopen the jail.
Wow.
At a jail meeting in May, one of the former detention officers, Brandy Taylor, said that there was no definite command at the jail, which was the main reason staff quit. Officers didn't feel adequately trained, and it wasn't clear who was in charge.
Ooh.
So in the meantime, while the jail is still closed, deputies continue to transport inmates to the Sanders County Jail in Thompson Falls and the Missoula County Jail, leaving fewer deputies on patrol.
Gosh, that's kind of a scary situation. Mm-hmm. And, you know, if you have any flying or crawling insects, mammals, or vermin, we can take care of them all at Silver Valley Exterminators. Wasps are a huge summer issue, and we want you to have a pest-free home or business. We will work with you until you are satisfied. We will work with you to create a plan that best meets your needs. For more information, check out SilverValleyExterminators.com or call 208-556-5594.
Perfect. All right. Well, we've ran through our regional stuff. What's on our horizon? Let's start to close this out.
I mean, I guess we could just, you know, put the gratuitous plug again in for Silver Hoops this weekend.
Right. We'll have coverage on that. The championship teams. By the way, if you win, make sure you get your photo taken.
We like to run all of our champions in the newspaper. Yeah. The Mullen Firemen Festival is going to have coverage.
Same with me. Yep. If you win or something like that, I'd like to get some team photos. So try to find me and we'll get that done.
And then on my end, it looks like Smelterville City Hall got a recent facelift. So we're going to talk a little bit about that.
Definitely.
As well as Shoshone Medical Center announcing their Employee of the Year.
Perfect. On my end, I'll be poking my head in on our local Idaho Department of Labor office.
Oh, yeah.
We're going to be, so them in addition to some other small town department labor offices are going to be closing. So we'll tell you where you need to go if you want those services.
Absolutely.
Perfect.
Gosh, that's tough.
Perfect.
Sucks for the little community. But hey, you know, in the meantime, if you need to pick yourself up, make yourself look nice, check out Blondie's Hair Salon. Blondie's Hair Salon is a full-service salon located at 207 South Division Street in Pinehurst. To schedule an appointment, call Blondie's at 208-682-2093.
I mean, I don't think you probably don't need to get your hair done, Joe.
I mean, I would like to get it, you know, maybe cornrowed.
Ooh, yeah.
Or, you know.
That's going to take a while to grow.
It's going to hurt. I could probably get my beard braided.
So, say, do you think they do beard?
Oh, I'm sure they do beard treatments. Everybody's doing that now.
That is a thing now.
It's a niche thing.
We could go in for some beard
treatments. That's true. Some nice beard oils, and that's good. But, hey, you know, we did start last week. We talked to you guys about our top five contest. We talked a little bit about it on the show. But we released our first five questions last week, and we're going to release our second five later today. Mm-hmm. So get online and vote. I believe that they've been going in order.
We know some people that are pretty excited for this second set. One person in particular, but
as long as they release in the order that I think they are, mm-hmm. that should be this week.
It'll be that one.
We're going to call this just nicely. We're going to call it the Coffee Shop Wars.
Yes,
because I truly believe that you are going to get your most participation out of the coffee shop.
Best coffee shop, best barista. That one's going to be. It's gonna be one of the top participating ones for sure.
And everybody has their own their own thing. It's cool.
I feel like we're gonna get answers all over the board for this one too.
I'm excited for it. I'm excited to see how the results. And we had within hours of our first five questions last week, had a stack of answers already pouring in. So absolutely. I can't imagine we're not.
We sold an ad today just to let people know to go on and vote for them. That's for the top five. So if anyone's interested in that for any category that we've got coming up, please feel free to let us know. We love to work you into our podcast.
Right. And once again, if you guys get any, if you're out there at any of these events, or if you see anything cool you think might be newsworthy, snap a picture, send it to us. Mm-hmm. We never turn down a gift.
Absolutely. Absolutely. I think, do we have anything else to go over?
No, I think we're good for the day, man.
Gotcha. All right. Well, I think the last thing I'll just tease it a little bit, but we are the News Press. We got this podcast. That's a big new thing for us, but we're also kind of tinkering with an app right now.
An application. On our phones?
News Press. On your phone. On your tablet. Phone. Just at the top of your fingers, you'll be able to find us. But we're currently still working on that. But it's coming down the pipe.
Coming down the pipe. All right. Well, once again, we'd like to thank Julie Zook with Silver Legacy Realty for bringing us this episode this week. If you're interested in buying a home in our beautiful Silver Valley, or if you would just like to sell your home, please contact Julie at 208-659-1764. Julie Zook, she's your best friend in real estate.
Gotta love it. All right. I think that's it.
Have a good weekend.
See you later.